Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Magnified with Matt Cooper, sponsored by Intact Insurance, the new name for RSA Insurance, and a new way to insure business with ease.
Go loud. Sounds better with us.
Hello, we're back for a new series of Magnified with thanks to Intact Insurance. You may know Intact Insurance by another name, RSA. There's a reason for the change of name. For brokers, this news means deeper engagement and enhanced product offerings across personal and commercial lines. So remember the name, it's now Intact Insurance. And Intact Insurance has big plans for Ireland. It wants to be one of the top three insurers in the Irish market by 2030. And here at Magnified, we're delighted to be part of that journey. Our new series of podcasts follows the format of old for Magnified. Considered interviews of longer duration than the format of radio and The Last Word allows me. So let's get to meet our first guest in this new series of Magnified. It's Hannah Rickson, the founder of Kella. Know what that is? Well, let's meet her. And thanks again to Intact Insurance. Many of my Magnified interviewees I've met previously, but not our guest today. It's first time meeting Hannah Rickson, who is a serial entrepreneur, having had three businesses previously, now on a fourth, which is called Kella, which is of interest to me because this is a woman's only business, is it?
It is, yeah.
Okay, explain to me why that is.
Well, I suppose it's not women only in terms of our team. We do have some lovely men on our team. But in terms of our ambition and our mission is about supporting female leaders because they need it right now.
Why do they need it?
Traditionally, women have, there have been very few opportunities at senior leadership for women.
This is in business now we're talking about.
This is in business, yeah. So women are getting to the top. They absolutely are. And over the years, many women have been very successful. But when they get there, they're very isolated. So a recent Morningstar survey in the States would say 67% of women who make it to the top, as we say, senior leadership, would say they've been lonely. They feel lonely and isolated in their roles. So what we're trying to do is to connect those women. So we connect the CEOs, the board members, the CMOs, you know, the C-suite level women, the managing directors to other women who are at similar levels so they can share challenges, wins, you know, losses, whatever they need to. But they have support and they can say to someone, they get it. They understand what they're going through.
Is this the Irish Country Women's Association at a very senior level?
Absolutely not, but I wouldn't knock it.
Why did you decide to start this business up? Why did you decide it was necessary?
Well, I suppose in terms of we always want to fix something. When we start businesses, we always want to fix a problem that exists. And for me, this has been a particular issue that I have seen and felt myself over the years. On panels that I've spoken on, I've felt like I've been the token woman. I've been rolled out for different metrics and DEI metrics. And it's not a nice feeling. And nobody wants to be the only one or the first woman to do anything. We want to be equal. You know, we want to have it at an equal level. And in terms of business, you know, companies with 30% women in senior leadership are up to 39% more profitable. So, you know, the equality drum has been banged for a long time.
Explain that to me. Where does this come from, this work? Companies have 30%, and you could say that it should be at least 50%, but just take 30%. That's a 39% more profitable. How has that worked out?
So the McKinsey report 2023, based on their research, that's what they found. And that's a global stat. So,
and why is it, do you think, that then that they're more profitable the more senior women there are in an organisation?
Well, I think there's more balanced and wider decision making and leadership traits. You know, women do bring different traits, and I'm not saying men don't bring those traits, but I think it is different. I think my mother is a very clever lady, says women think by talking a lot of the time, where men tend to, and I'm not kind of doing broad strokes here, but tend to come with a solution. Now, I'm a solutions person, so I'm more of the male brain. But a lot of women would not necessarily be asking your opinion, but would like to talk out a problem with a trusted sounding board. And in safe environments, that's easy to do. But when it's not safe, it's not. So when you're the only, then it's not a safe environment. So I think women bring more generally, not broad strokes again, but generally, there's more emotional intelligence, there's more softer approach, more caring, they're nurturing a workforce. And I think very fundamentally, when you can see it, you can be it. And we're looking at, you know, gender pay gaps and all of this kind of thing. The broken rung is huge. So if younger women can see women in senior leadership, they're going to go for it.
Now, excuse me if I start going for gross generalizations here and some of the suggestions I might make to you, but could it be that what often happens in many organizations, businesses, is that when the men are in the top positions, there tends to be a lot of testosterone at work, mm-hmm. and there's an awful lot of more instant aggressive decisions are made?
Well, again, broad strokes, but I think what happens is when you have balanced senior leadership, you have balanced decision making. And that's kind of that's generally it.
Would you worry, though, that I've noticed from going to graduation ceremonies with my daughters in university recently that still, for a lot of things, I have one daughter who's an engineer, I have another who's just come out of economics and finance, and I look at the numbers who are getting their parchments, and it's still overwhelmingly male. And I think back to my own time when I was in college many years ago now at this stage, decades ago, and again, commerce degree, overwhelmingly male as against female. That's still the problem, is the reason that we have only 30% of female leaders in businesses is they're not even coming through in the initial academic levels.
Well, actually, in terms of entering college, there is 50%. But it falls out. So it does fall off and fall off.
It also depends on what courses
exactly.
they go to.
So in terms of the senior positions, CEO, CFO, COO. COO can be kind of more balanced, but CFO, CEO, definitely higher male ratios. And they're the decision-making positions in a company, generally. CMO, CHRO, CO, a lot of women are making it to that level, but again, don't have that decision-making impact in a company. So where, like, 1 in 7 Irish companies don't have any women at senior leadership at all. So this is a huge problem in Ireland.
Okay, let's walk back on how you started your own business career. Okay. How did you start
Before
out?
Before I became an advocate and an activist.
Yeah, okay. But actually, I was reading one story about you and I was looking up about you, and you started in the teddy manufacturing business.
Yes, yeah, I
did. As an 11-year-old.
I did, yeah.
And you discovered business failure early.
I did, yeah. So fail fast, I think, is the lesson I learned. So yeah, I was very inspired by my fifth class teacher, and she had taught us how to make these fluffy teddies. And I was thinking, why hasn't the whole world cottoned on to this? You know, this is amazing. So I spent an entire summer. I bought all the material. I had to earn it. I washed windows. I cleaned the car. I did all of that. Bought my raw materials, set up, we were in Galway for the summer, set up, was on the sewing machine all day long and made quite a few of these teddies and didn't sell any, and devastated.
Not even to your parents?
Not even to my parents, no. They were big believers in, no, if you're going to do it right. So
why did it fail?
I suppose I didn't do my market research. There wasn't really a market for it, even within my own family. So, I found that out very quickly.
Okay, but you did take the lesson from that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no more teddies. I'm not making teddies today. So
I think the real lesson though, wasn't it? Don't make something that people don't want.
Yeah, probably more likely, yes. So yes, yeah, so I've always carried that with me. And my own, like my own parents are very entrepreneurial and very creative. My dad always had businesses. His mom was a hotelier from the age of 16, so she inherited a hotel. So we were always working. My dad had pubs. I was behind the bar totally illegally from age 12, but really learned that customer service piece and having the conversations was very key to any business relationship because you want people to come back to have the conversations over and over again.
Yeah. How important is it for anyone involved in business, involved in life, to have worked in something, even if it's as a teenager or as a young adult in retailing, be it I had four highly enjoyable years working behind a bar. I've encouraged all my kids to work in service industries just to get the experience of actually talking to people.
I think it's key. I think it should be mandatory for all teenagers, especially now when they don't even want to pick up the phone to have a voice conversation. I think confidence levels have fallen around communication. And I think when you're in hospitality, you don't have a choice. You're in a serving position. You're asking people how their day is. You want to engage with them because good customer service relies very heavily on the person who is delivering. I always said, I worked in hospitality for a long time and I always said, you can teach a job, but you can't teach a personality. But those personalities can be nurtured out and those skills, those customer service skills can be nurtured. So even at a very baseline, you can bring out, this is the basic requirements in terms of, I suppose, the foundations for good relationships.
And initially, did you want to build a career in hospitality?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to do the cert course in bar management and my mother wouldn't let me.
Why not?
She didn't feel like it was a real career. And But my father had pubs in London, so we would have gone over every summer and I loved it. But I loved the people aspect of it. So she was encouraging me into a proper career, but in the people side of it. So, of course, I didn't listen to her. And I did the New Opportunities for Women course in aircraft maintenance because that was an obvious jump.
Aircraft maintenance. What attracted you to that? It's in Shannon, is it?
Yeah, it was in Shannon Aerospace at the time. And the New Opportunities for Women program was being rolled out. It was a European Union directive, I think. And there was 10 of us chosen for this course. And I did it because I was told I couldn't.
Okay, and what was involved in it? How long did you stick at it?
So it was, I think it was a 12 or 15 week course. It was short. It was kind of like a taster for the career of aircraft maintenance. And it was based out in Shannon Aerospace, run through FOSS, and we kind of had the fundamentals of like aeronautics, the engineering, design, and then kind of real practical skills. We were on the planes. We were looking for faulty rivets. We were doing all.
Are you good with a spanner and a screwdriver?
I'm very handy. I'm very handy. Yeah, so it was really interesting. And after that, I went on and did general engineering in FOSS. At the time, I was a bit lost. So I was kind of falling from one thing into another.
What age were you at this stage?
17, 18. But I really enjoyed kind of the look of shock on people's faces when I told them what I was doing. Probably was the most impactful.
Why didn't you stick at it?
At the time, there was no jobs for women in aerospace, very few. You were kind of fighting against the tide. So older engineers would have been saying, it's all contract based. Women don't get offered contracts in this space. Now, later, I discovered that there were women working in the space, but they were fighting tooth and nail for those positions. And I think I wasn't passionate enough about it to really look under the bonnet a little bit more.
What might have happened, though? What might have been?
Well, I don't know, because I did honestly spend my entire childhood taking things apart and putting them back together. No speaker was safe, no radio, no boombox. Like, it was gone. So if I had a screwdriver and you left something in front of me that I could take apart, it was gone. So really fascinated by the big magnets and speakers, all of that.
We have a lot in the studio.
I know.
Want to
be careful.
take anything to it.
Yeah.
So then you headed to Australia, did you, at that stage?
Yeah, I headed to Australia. My sister was in Australia and headed over there. And it was with a view to spending a year over there working in hospitality and really kind of just broadening my experience. and it was so much fun. I worked in the first late night Irish venue called The Bog in Perth. So I'm sure that'll ring a lot of bells for a lot of Irish people who were there around 95, 96, 97. And it was so much fun. We had Finbar Fury in, we had the River Dance, we had all of these amazing visitors come to us because we were there available after they had done their shows in Perth. So over they'd come.
How long did you stay there?
I actually ended up staying in Perth for 6 years. So my oldest son, Callum, was born in 1998 and we went back to Australia then. So we had great fun.
Okay. But what brought you back to Ireland then after that?
So I had gone through a custody battle for Callum and was kind of like, right, need to get back, need to get home, bosom of my family, kind of licking the wounds a little bit. So myself and Callum came back and he was 4 and a half and started our lives here.
And when you started your life here, it sort of gave you your first business idea, your first entrepreneurial role.
It did, yeah. So because obviously my precious darling Callum, I had studied HR in the meantime. I had gone to college over there. And obviously this was, you know, combining my love of dealing with people and my love of business, and it kind of worked very well. I really enjoyed it and came back to Ireland in 2000 or 2002 to launch my glittering career in HR. And anyone who lived in Ireland in 2002 realizes that everyone else had studied HR at the time. So it was a very crowded market. But before I could launch my glittering career, I had to find amazing after-school childcare for Callum. And it didn't exist in Ireland at the time. So at the time, for school-age childcare, it was very much an afterthought. They were usually in someone's house in a back room, kind of watching videos and kicking a ball around while the younger children were taken care of. And I felt like we had come from Australia where Callum had had such amazing childcare, and school-age childcare was such an important part of the curriculum. And for parents too, you know, so you weren't that guilt that we all feel, that you felt like your kids were engaged in something interesting. And so just started looking at it, had a lot of support from the Childcare Committee in Limerick because they wanted this to happen and no one had done it. So very helpful with grants and setup. And Dr. Mary Maloney was just, she was so involved. And we set up ARA Children's Centre with a ARA, go on, give us your children, but ARA also meaning care. on the South Circular Road in Limerick, and we provided primarily after-school childcare, very high-quality after-school childcare where there was curriculums and where we were doing a lot of the burden, taking a lot of the burden off parents. We were providing a very nutritious home-cooked meal, we were getting homework done, and we were doing activities. So we were bringing in the karate teacher, we were bringing in the art teachers, we were bringing, so the kids were having their extracurricular activities as part of their afternoon.
It's a period of life which I think an awful lot of parents underestimate how difficult it is. They go through the infant stage and they get creches organised and they think things maybe are going to be easier when the children start going to school. Mm-hmm. And actually, in so many respects, it gets harder, doesn't it? Because junior infants stops at a particular time of the day. Senior mm-hmm. infants might be an hour later. And first class and onwards is later again, but it's still mid-afternoon when everything finishes. And parents are juggling and trying to get to and from the school to do collections and mm-hmm. pickups. And the reality is, isn't it, that in many cases, maybe most cases, that falls to a mother rather than to a father.
Absolutely. And schools start late in Ireland. Schools start at 9 a.m. Most of us start work at 8, you know, or would like to get ahead of our day. And in terms of promotion and those opportunities, because a lot of the time the mom is taking the slack around school drop-offs, school collections, creche collections, dinners, et cetera, et cetera, then that limited time in work or that kind of taking time away from work is lessening promotion opportunities.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to get to. Mm-hmm. That is why we end up with only 30% of women at senior levels, perhaps.
Yeah, and we lose a lot of women at maternity. We lose an awful lot of women who feel like they have kind of, because they've stepped out to have a baby, the next generation of everything. We won't survive without women having babies. They're punished. Their male peers have had an extra year in their role. They're promoted on. The women are going back into their roles, maybe at a lesser. And And it's hard, and you don't want to leave your baby, and, you know, flexible working isn't an opportunity. So I think the whole, you know, we need to shake up the whole 9 to 5.
Is it ever going to change though, really?
I think it's getting better. I think ironically, COVID had a positive effect on proving that we could actually work from home. Obviously, it had detrimental effects elsewhere. But I think in terms of supporting women, I think it had positives. Now, what we're hearing now is that the women who are staying at home and who are delighted to do so because they can run out and stick on a wash or stick on the dinner or walk the dog in those in-between times or on their breaks or on their lunchtime are now finding that they're missing out on those conversations that happen, the informal conversations at work, the conversations in the kitchen, the conversations at the water cooler, where they hear about the opportunities coming up, or they're in that inner circle where it's hot off the press, the information's hot off the press, and they're not getting that because they're that one step removed. So that's causing a problem.
Is it men who are driving this thing about getting back into the office and into the workplace, do you think?
I don't know. I think that it's maybe traditional thinking that's driving it as opposed to any particular gender. You know, the traditional way is we all show up for work at a certain time, we stay there till a certain time, and that's a good day's work. But actually, productivity, profitability, that's not the model for those things. So flexibility, allowing people to be flexible, men and women, parents, you know, people with caring responsibilities, the sandwich generation where we have caring responsibilities for older, for parents and for children, you know, we're balancing a lot. So I think if we bring the human aspect back in, then, you know, and that's where that EQ comes into it. That's where that more empathetic and caring leadership style would probably step in and go, right, bottom line is going to improve if our workers are happy in their lives. How can we make them happy? By maybe cutting them a little bit of slack around the stressful or the pain points in their lives. And the all of those things kind of just get a little bit smoother.
Tell me how you developed the childcare business, though.
So, how I started it, or how it...
Yeah, how you started, because you were involved in this venture in South Circular Road in mm-hmm. Limerick, which you set up basically an app, wasn't it?
Yeah, so Last Minute Minders. So, honestly, if I had really leaned into that, we were ahead of Uber, we were ahead of Tinder, we were ahead of all of those in terms of matching algorithms and platforms. There were no algorithms at the time, but in terms of platforms and what we were trying to do. So I just didn't understand why there wasn't a database of trained professional, guard-the-vetted childcare professionals that I could lean into if we had a childcare breakdown, because we had to work to ratios. Now, we only had to work to ratios up to the age of 6. After 6, there were no ratios for school-age childcare. I could have had 200 kids in there with one minder, and that would have been perfectly acceptable. But we actually put in quality benchmarks ourselves. So in terms of that, we needed to have this database of people that we could rely on. I couldn't open one day because we had, I think it was a stomach flu that went through the staff, and we couldn't open. And imagine the knock-on effect that had on parents and workforce and jobs. So we discovered that there was a lot of people who would want to work. And again, to offer flexible working, if you had a job and you wanted to increase your income, if you had caring responsibilities, if you could only work within the school hours, you know, why couldn't we facilitate those kind of people? Because that would be an untapped resource. So we set up this the platform that would match quality childcare with creches who needed them. And then that extended, and we ended up supporting the likes of Google, Bank America, Northern Trust, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, pop-up wedding and event creches in Dromoland and Adair Manor. So it kind of grew arms and legs, but obviously there was a huge need there. So it was a really steep learning curve, but very interesting, and kind of gave me the appetite for saying, well, there's a tech solution here to connect people, but while keeping that human element very much front and centre. Because in childcare, that was obviously the most important.
Yeah, but given your background, HR, hospitality, all the rest of it,
yeah.
How did you develop the tech aspect to this?
Oh, on A4 pieces of paper, and I brought my developer by the hand around saying, okay, So when you press this button, you go to page 5 over there in the corner, and it would walk him over there and say, and when you press this, you go to step 3. And if you press this, you go to page 5. And it was very confusing. That was my wireframe on the floor of a shared office in the AIB building in Limerick.
But you did build up a platform, a tech platform, to match the childminders with particular customers.
Yeah, we did. And it was great, very successful. But obviously, childcare is a heavily regulated space, or should be a very heavily regulated space. So we needed 8 pieces of documentation in our mind, because I love a quality benchmark. I don't know if that's come across. So, and I'm always making life difficult for myself in terms of quality. So 8 different pieces of documentation with every single childcare professional. They would all need to be filed securely. GDPR was coming, you know, so all of those bits of information needed to be housed in a very sensitive manner. And then they needed to be uploaded. And then, and only then, could that person be offered.
So where did the business develop to? Did you just let it go, or did you sell it?
No, so I'm really interested in personal development. So I had done a couple of courses throughout my time there, and I had done New Frontiers through the LIT at the time and the Enterprise Centre there. And they were very much encouraging us to look at other options. Where could our businesses go? What could we do with them? And of course, hospitality is just my biggest grow, and was at the time. And childcare was functional for me. I needed childcare to mind Callum, and then this opportunity came. But to pivot back into hospitality was really interesting to me. So we had a management buyout. Our operations manager actually bought Last Minute Minders. And then we moved into Get the Shifts and started developing this very similar matching algorithm and platform for hospitality workers without all of the paperwork.
Yeah. Explain the name, why you picked Get the Shifts.
Oh, look at the regrets. I felt like we needed a Ron seal. You know, it's exactly what it says on the tin.
Except people might think it was something
absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. So I had to always lead with not a dating agency. And of course, that's only in Ireland. So I was thinking, once we get past Ireland, we'll be fine. So I did have global plans for this this business. It went gangbusters. It was really, really busy, really, really quickly. We supported festivals and events and all of the big venues, all the
sporting
events.
So explain how it worked.
So again, it was volume based. So people would need, so let's say the Aviva for Match Day might need, you know, a couple of hundred staff, but they would need very it's skilled workers. So they'd need bar staff, they'd need stewards, they'd need wait staff. And again, my philosophy about you can teach a job, but you can't teach a personality. So we hired for personality every single time. They would just...
So you developed a roster of people for various positions, and then you would be able to match them with the customers.
Yeah, so people would sign up
on a particular day when it was needed.
So people would sign up and they would say, this is my availability, these are my skills, here's the references to back up my skills, these are the days that I'm interested, these are the times I'm interested in working. So they could work around college, we would say, earn as you learn. They could earn, you know, say around caring, caring responsibilities, things like that. And again, it was, for me, it was about tapping into the untapped. You know, these people wanted to earn, but it was the traditional model didn't fit. So it was about really leaning into that and opening up this resource. So we had 2,500 people on the platform who were ready and willing to work in hospitality in Ireland.
When did you set this up? What year about?
2017.
Okay, because this sounds very similar to even things like the, you mentioned Uber earlier, but if you take something like Halo, I remember interviewing the founder of Halo, who basically was trying to say this was exactly the same platform, matching drivers in cars with jobs. So you were doing much the same.
Yeah, we were. So, or like Handy in the US, matching cleaners to, I think around that time, a lot of people started looking at the untapped resources that were there, and flexible working was coming really into its own. It was really good. It was really popular. It worked really, really well. And then FRS Recruitment actually acquired us in March 2021.
Okay, why did you decide to sell?
It wasn't something that was on my radar. Actually, I was approached by by them and decided to sit down and investigate, you know, investigate all opportunities. So we had quite a few conversations. I was part of the EY Winning Globally, Winning Women Network globally at the time. So EY came in and were very supportive in terms of, you know, their acquisition merger specialists. So I had lots of good talent with me. I was able to kind of go, is this a good thing? Is this a good time for me? And they were saying, well, look, you know, it's a good time on paper. So you just need to think about if it's a good time for you. And I love starting businesses. I love it. That startup ecosystem, the stress, I'm absolutely addicted. I do think I have a problem. Someone please set up some sort of support group for me. Because it's the buzz of the setup. It's the buzz of an idea being in your head, seeing it come to life. And after that, I'm very happy to hand it over to someone who'll run it. You know, run it, grow it, scale it, perfect it, polish it. And I'm very happy to step back into a more strategic, creative role.
Because you did stay with Get the Shifts for a while, did you?
I did, yeah. I had a 2.5 year exit.
Okay. And what was that like then, working for somebody else?
It was interesting. It was an interesting...
Is that a euphemism, is it?
It was an interesting time. I learned a lot. I learned a lot about how bigger businesses are run. I suppose I learned a lot about kind of org charts and structure and budgets and, I suppose, the guide rails that were in place in large organisations, where the flexibility was maybe lost.
You don't sound wildly enthusiastic about bigger business being in control of one.
Look, as I said, I love startups. I love the agility. I love the quick decision making. I wasn't used to having a decision have to go up the line and come down the line. And we have a couple of questions on that. And I'm like, what? Like, you know, and previously, fail fast. I learned that very, very young. Try it, fail at it, move on.
Okay, but you mentioned Canem earlier, but you also, in the interim, you've gotten married, you've had two more children. Mm-hmm. How difficult is it to devote yourself to setting up businesses when you also have those family responsibilities and the desire to spend time with people?
It's really, really difficult. And you're compromising all of the time. And I think that I am exceptionally lucky in how supportive my husband, Davy, is. He's my biggest cheerleader. And even sometimes I would say he hasn't a clue what I'm at. And he's just like, you go, you do whatever you need to do. And that's phenomenal. I have very supportive kids. My oldest is back living in Australia now. And he would ring me. He'll probably give a call today to say, how'd you get on? So we're very supportive of each other. My daughter, Clara Rose, got her junior cert results yesterday. I wasn't there for that. Kind of heartbreaking. She's my baby. But she knows. And she was saying, this is not a big deal. Mom, this is so small. You know, you go, you're doing something important. And to have that level of support and for her to mean it, she genuinely means it. And for me, it's really important that my boys, as well as my daughter, see me out in the workplace, see me having the successes that we've enjoyed and see me going again and following my passion. And as I say to them, just, you know, do what you love. Just do what you love. Callum's working as a scientist, you know, the mad scientist, we call him. But that's what he loves. He had to go to Australia for those opportunities, which is really sad. He'll come back to Ireland, he hopes, in the future as an established scientist and be able to get a role here. So, you know, but they go after what they want. And I think that's really important.
Before I get to Kella, have I missed out on any other startups?
No. Yeah, that's Ara, Last Minute Minders and Get the Shifts. Yeah.
Okay, right. So tell us, Kella, I mean, you've explained what it is earlier, but why did you decide that that's where you would go for your next startup?
I think that I've really been interested in supporting women. I'm a lead for Going for Growth with Paul. I've done that for the last 4 years. I was at their annual conference on Monday and Tuesday. I am a mentor for Enterprise Ireland. I'm a lead for Back for Business, so, and a judge for the National Enterprise Award. So I do a lot in terms of the startup and the startup ecosystem, I suppose, and that space. But in terms of women, I kind of saw the start of the possibilities in Going for Growth. I did Going for Growth myself.
So what is Going for Growth?
So Going for Growth is a programme run by the formidable Paula Fitzsimons. It's supported by KPMG and Enterprise Ireland. And it's a six-month roundtable experience facilitated. Each roundtable is facilitated by a lead entrepreneur. So I would be the lead entrepreneur in that instance. And you run through the six-month programme month by month, from goal setting to finance to knowing your customer segmentations, marketing. And at the end of it, then, you know, Paula would take where the company is when they come in and where they come out in terms of jobs, revenue. And every single time companies have grown, excelled, you know. And so that structure kind of taught me, when there is that support system there and that ecosystem, women do better, because the round tables are, you know, they're like confessionals. They, you know, you're bringing, I can't pay the wages this month, or I feel like a bad mom, or I've no childcare. But that all comes to the table because it's safe. It's a safe environment. So all of that kind of taught me how important it is. And then being part of EY Winning Women, that's a global network that I'm involved with. I've climbed Kilimanjaro with those women. I've walked the Camino. I have done the most amazing, fabulous, fantastic things that have deepened my relationships, that have broadened my knowledge, and that have made me a better person, a more rounded person in the world, because of the women that I surround myself with. Because, and what we always say in Kella is, we're unapologetically ambitious. We go for it. You know, I'm very lucky in my life that I have never felt lonely or isolated. I have felt like the only on some panels, but it's temporary. It's temporary. And I've always felt that my voice is heard, that I have an opinion, and that I can make a difference.
So what's the business model for Kella, and how big is it now?
So Kella is a subscription model. It's a membership. It's a club for very senior women to connect with other senior women. We have 400 women in Kella at the moment. And we have a lot of corporate interest, because the biggest part of Kella is retention. Companies and corporates want to keep their women. It's hard to get them, so they want to keep them, because replacing a senior leader can cost you up to 300% of the salary. And as I've said already, diverse leadership teams are more profitable. So companies are very committed to keeping their women there. Also, that upper quartile on that gender pay gap reporting is very glaringly obvious. So from a visibility perspective, from a cost perspective, from a more balanced leadership perspective, and from a profitability perspective, companies want to keep their women there. And I would encourage companies to invest in their women by looking at options like Kella. So we're the only, I suppose, company in Ireland that are doing this. We have members in 10 countries already.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, are you going to expand this internationally?
We are, yeah. So the matching algorithm that we have matches women with other women that is bias-free. It's
corporate dating, is it?
Maybe. But yeah, but I think what it is a lot of the networks who are doing amazing work are disjointed, and they kind of end at a certain level for women. I've spoken to senior women who say, oh no, our company is amazing. We have this internal network and we do this, this and this. And myself and the other senior women, we mentor and we help and we engage with those women on the leadership journey. And I'm saying, well, who mentors you? No one.
How helpful are men to this? Because there seems to be, you know, you mentioned DEI earlier, which is not fashionable to talk about anymore.
No.
And you mentioned, you know, women, 30% of roles. There's a kickback in the United States in particular at present. And this sort of the trad wife thing is becoming very prevalent. The whole thing is that women go back into the home, know your place. Yeah. The man gets out there, the man provides, he raises the money. And it's almost as if there's a resentment on the part of a lot of men about better educated women getting the jobs that they believed they were once entitled to.
I think that's only a very small percentage of men. Most men are very supportive of women.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it would be wrong of us to lean into that, because that would almost empower that very, very small percentage.
I'm not advocating leaning into it. I'm just worried that it is becoming something that is developing a degree of momentum.
I think it's scary.
A lot of the things that we thought over the last couple of years that wouldn't develop momentum
have.
Absolutely.
In the last 9 months, S&P 500 companies in the States have lost 80 women off board seats. That's in the last 9 months. We lost our only two female CEOs of Isaac 20 last year. We have no representation, you know, at that level. It's scary. But in Fortune 500 companies, it's creeping up. We went up by 1% last year. Ireland is still at 19% female CEOs. We need to push that up. But I do think male allies are hugely important, especially in corporates, because they're the decision makers a lot of the time. They're the ones signing the check on the Kellam membership, which is awful, but it is there. So we need those men to go, actually, our company, our organization will be better, will be actually future-proofed, will be stronger if we have more diverse leadership. And they need to lean into that. And the women need to advocate for themselves. They need to stand up and say, I actually need this level of support to stay, to be supported in a different way. And I will bring back a wide network. I will bring back lots of opportunities for the company. I will bring back more, like, you know, profitability and more productivity, because, you know, you'll know as a woman that actually that challenge that you faced where you felt, oh my God, there's something doesn't feel right here. You're absolutely 100% right. But I've had senior leaders in multinationals in Ireland say to me that they haven't been honest in their roles in 20 years because honesty looks like weakness and women can't look weak. And that's scary. I've had women say to me that they had planned their children around their career, but, oh, I've never told anyone that. And I was saying, why not? That's very clever. That's a very sensible thing to do. Well, I would be seen as cold or hard-hearted or not maternal if I was saying that. And that needs to change. That needs to change. Women need to keep having children so that we have people in the world. You know, the men who are making these decisions were all born. So they're very thankful to women that they're on the planet. So they need to be making decisions to support more women.
I'm going to leave it there. Hannah Rickson, it has been great meeting you on Magnified. If people want to get in touch with Kella, what's the website?
It's kellaleadership.com. But just one last thing. Our AI and the tech platform is always backed up by really curated in-person events. Small groups of women that you can meet in person and then develop the relationship online. Because we know that that's what solidifies it.
Hannah Rickson, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Magnified with Matt Cooper, sponsored by Intact Insurance, the new name for RSA Insurance, offering personal and commercial cover with ease.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.